quote, "I don't like horror. World, stop trying to force horror down my throat."
Unexpected Items, Issue 2, June 2026. From unexpecteditems.noblogs.org. The editorial from an anarchist periodical, the PDF is linked, coming out of London. Quote, "This is exactly what this paper wishes to pay close attention to. The subversive remainder, the except for, which is left over after the list of all the horrors of voluntary servitude has finished its recital. Intentionally turning in the direction of the exceptions is part of a life choice to be alone along with all the others who deliberately turn their backs on what is realistic in order to drink the chaotic expanse of all that is possible." Unquote. Sounds like there are people. Sweet.
About chaotic intentions and words of Panagiotis Argyro, formerly of Conspiracy of Cells of Fire. From Act for Freedom Now, a report about an exhibit in memory of Punky Maori. This is most of it. Quote, "With theater, music, audiovisual displays, and graphic creations, we brought to life chaotic intentions in memory of Punky Maori, 17 years after his death in action. More than 30 artistic creations were exhibited, moving beyond the sterile art galleries to vibrant spaces that commemorate the struggle. We thank everyone who participated, attended, contributed, and made this initiative possible. Another contribution to the flow of anarchist combative memory that opens up every Black May, not only to remember the comrade, but also to give continuity to the practice of denying domination, which Maori staunchly put into practice. Music, explosives, drawings, poetry, hoods, posters, writings, fire, and gunpowder." Unquote.
Every alley is Stud Alley, from Anonymous. "A party that has been happening during the Pride weekend is not being organized this year in hopes that something else creative and chaotic will happen." Quote, "And yet we find ourselves longing to create something different. We don't want this to be a party simply for a party's sake, because it is expected or assumed. The worlds we seek are indescribable. The moments we create are experiments in finding them. Doing anything just to do it, because it is routine, because we've done it before, is so, so boring. Nothing queer, nothing anarchist, nothing liberatory should ever be boring. We don't want to live those lives. That's for straight people. The alley has never, ever been boring, and we don't want to see that happen." Unquote. Fingers crossed for the scary future.
Fundraiser for more anarchist printing presses in Abya Yala. From email, quote, "We are an anti-authoritarian anarchist publishing distributor in the north of the territory dominated by the Mexican state. We appeal to international anarchist solidarity in order to raise funds for a high-volume printer so we can continue our work of editing, binding, and printing books, propaganda, and pamphlets. Since our beginnings, the intention has been to bring the written word into the streets in different formats, fanzines, books, posters, and anarchist graphics. The goal has been to insist on creating spaces for gathering, anti-prison activities, countercultural fairs, discussions, film screenings, and documentaries, all with the aim of stirring dialogue." Unquote. What can we say? Not only are we pro-anarchist infrastructure, but it may be that pretty soon Mexico is where we're getting all our anarchist stuff from.
Never-ending story of the Phoenix 2 case, from lucasburrell.noblogs.org. "One of the defendants in this ongoing trial reflects on the inability of the court system to acknowledge the motivation of many anarchists. Quote, the police and the courts have plenty of technology, resources, and personnel at their disposal, yet someone is deliberately setting cars and other property on fire right under their noses without anyone being able to prove who is behind it. Yet they keep trying and refuse to give up. The trial in the Phoenix 2 case is still ongoing. They continue to try to link me and my friends to some of the aforementioned property attacks to convict us and to punish us. They still cling to the fantasy that anarchists' direct actions happen because someone is inciting them or promoting something. But as is generally known, anarchists neither need nor want leaders who will tell them what to do and how to do it." Unquote. The proceeding was most of the text, but there are also many, many photos of burned out cars.
Interview with APO, Anarchist Political Organization Greece, at the IFA Congress from International of Anarchist Federations. Oh dear. There are maybe two questions here that are interesting, but the responses are all just jargon and assertions. The questioner even asks at the end if there's a slogan they'd like to end with. I mean, sure, that could be a language thing, but I prefer to think of it as a cutting commentary. Let me have my illusions, damn it.
Interview with Class Hall at the IFA Congress. From International of Anarchist Federations. A somewhat more engaging interview. Includes some talk about what projects some of their participants of Class Hall have been doing, expresses some feelings, says something about the Serbian context for the group, and the speaker isn't afraid to have an opinion that hasn't been vetted by their organization. Of course, it's federationalists talking to federationalists, but at least one gets a sense of a human somewhere in there. I mean, yes, being a human is overrated, but it's lots better than being a robot. Have you ever tried being a robot?
Yeah, people try all the time. The 2026 Hamilton Anarchist Book Fair from hamiltonanarchistbookfair.noblogs.org. Here's almost the whole announcement. Quote, anarchists, anti-authoritarians, and those curious about anarchy are invited for a day of workshops, discussions, and tables featuring zines, art, books, and info on local projects. We hope this will be a day to share knowledge in the spirit of spreading practices of autonomy, direct action, and solidarity. We also hope it will be a day to make connections and strengthen our networks, with the goal of building strong resistance movements in this region and beyond. Admission is free, food is provided, and childcare and kids' activities will be available all day. Make a weekend of it with our outdoor social in conjunction with Hamilton running down the walls the following day. Unquote. Links for various kinds of participation. We like report backs. Nudge, nudge.
Anarchism, a social movement and way of life. From Perspectiva, which seems to be a publishing blog, this is written by Dr. Swan Dow, who is a founder of some kind of institute. There are a few glitches here from associating anarchy with the left, forgivable for an Anarchy 101, I guess, to the final paragraph that says the first handbook on anarchism was published in 2012, to which I can only say, huh? But mostly this is a fantastic beginner text, if lengthy for today's standards. If your mom is still trying to understand what you're on about, send her this. It's not jargony, it gets the principles right, includes some relevant history, contextualizes the violence without decrying it, cites plenty of actual anarchists, and...
analysts?
I didn't... All I said was A-N-A. Don't put an L in my fucking mouth. Where was I? Anal. Cites plenty of anal anarchists and doesn't position anarchists as the best ever social workers. Quote, anarchism is taking center stage amongst the new social movements of the 21st century. It is, as Graeber puts it, the source of most of what's new and hopeful about it. In the face of the failure of state socialism, historian of communism David Priestland boldly writes that anarchism could help save the world.
Mm-hmm.
In 2007, political theorist Uri Gordon stated that the past 10 years have seen the full-blown revival of anarchism as a global movement and coherent set of political discourses on a scale and to levels of unity and diversity unseen since the 1930s. Indeed, it is anarchist modes of action and organization that predominate today. From anti-capitalist social centers and eco-feminist communities to raucous street parties and blockades of international summits, anarchist forms of resistance and organizing have been at the heart of the alternative globalization movement. The position of Marxism as the left-wing political ideology par excellence is gradually being eroded and replaced by anarchist-inspired alter-globalization movements. It is now widely accepted that left libertarian ideas, values, and practices are thriving today. Since the late 1990s, anarchism has been driving the radical socio-political movement against neoliberal globalization. Unquote. This is too solid of a step in the recuperation of anarchist thought, but your mom will probably like it.
Obituaries. Ben Morea, principal provocateur of 1960s anarchist group, dies at 84. From the New York Times by Michael S. Rosenwald. Another obituary for Morea offering a pretty rounded view on his life and a photo of a mustache.
Mustaches!
Morea is remarkable for a variety of reasons, but one of them is his reemergence as a relevant figure for radicals after being more or less out of sight for years. Okay, sure, I'll accept that as a more or less working pun. Some of the quotations in this obit are from a talk he gave to Ill Will in 2019, for example. This also indicates his willingness to talk to folks he disagreed with. Quote, Ben wanted us to be the action faction, to be doing rather than talking about doing, Osha Newman, a member of the group who later became a civil rights lawyer, said in an interview. He believed in the propaganda of the deed, not in the propaganda of the word, and he mobilized us in ways that were not traditionally political, unquote. Sounds like someone we'd all like to get to know better, right? Hate to give the Times any props, but this is a fun and inspiring read. Also, kudos to Newman. Getting old is hard work.
In Memoriam, Bill Bachman, from Black Rose Federation. Obituary for a longtime member of Black Rose, previous member of Trotskyist Group. Wonder what kind of lingering effect that might have had. There is a link for you to email your memories of Bill to be included on a memorial page.
And Donnie fucking don't.
And for the discussion of the week, we are discussing the text Is It Fascist Now? By Wayne Price, posted on May 28, 2026.
And Wayne Price is someone who places anarchism on the left, for just for context, dear reader. There is a debate on the left over whether we are facing fascism with Trump's MAGA regime. Some say no, pointing to all the freedoms and democratic rights which still exist. They have confidence in the U.S.'s democratic heritage. Others point to the viciously repressive aspects of Trump's government as evidence of fascism. Some are liberals who have such confidence in the U.S. heritage of democracy that they are shocked to see the state act in anti-democratic ways. It must be fascism, they conclude. Who is correct? To discuss this fruitfully, it is necessary to make some important distinctions. First is the difference between bourgeois democracy and fascism. Fascism is the antonym of liberal democracy within a capitalist society. Its advocates wish to replace liberal democracy with a different form of management of the capitalist system, removing basic civil rights and limits on executive power, strengthening the repressive apparatus to weaken working class organization, and adopting ethno-nationalist forms of social exclusion. In contrast, socialism is the antonym, not of the liberal democratic state, but of capitalism itself. Generally, the capitalist class prefers a limited democracy to fascism or other authoritarian systems, if there is enough prosperity and stability. For the ruling rich, the advantage of liberal democracy is that their factions can struggle over differences of opinion and interests and make decisions without a bloody civil war. And if incompetent fools get into power, they can be peacefully gotten rid of in the next election. It also makes it easier to trick the population into believing that they are a free people running society. For the working class, a limited bourgeois democracy makes it easier to organize against the capitalists, parentheses arguably, whether in unions, radical groupings, or in other ways. Okay, I'm going to scroll down a little bit towards where he starts drawing full conclusions. Okay. Ah. There have been reactionary periods before. In the 50s, the country went through a time of anti-communist hysteria and repression represented by Joe McCarthy, J. Edgar Hoover, and the John Birch Society, as well as Truman's security firings of civil servants. Meanwhile, a quarter of the nation had legal racial segregation enforced by the police and the Ku Klux Klan. Some on the left, such as the Communist Party, thought that fascism was taking over. It did not. Unlike today, that was also a time of economic prosperity, at least for most white people. The period after World War II has been called, quote, the golden age of capitalism. It lasted until the 70s. Instead of fascism, it developed into a period of radicalization and democratization. This was the time of the civil rights, black liberation movement, and the anti-Vietnam War movement, amongst other struggles. The rise of Trumpism, with or without Trump, is a symptom of an international crisis of the capitalist system. Fascism may be beaten back again and again. It will continue, and it will keep on re-arising until the system itself, the system of capitalism and its states, has been replaced by a society of freedom, equality, participation, and cooperation. Temporarily upholding one form of capitalism, the limited liberal democracy, will not save us. Destruction of fascism for good requires methods of independent mass struggle at the workplace and in the community. Published in the Anarcho-Syndicalist Review, originally.
Okay. So just to recapitulate here, so it seems to me, I'm asking for help here.
Yeah.
So he's trying, like, he's arguing if the MAGA/Trump regime is a fascist regime, just to conclude that it's actually not a problem of the regime itself, but the capitalist system. Is it more or less? Would you?
Yeah, maybe that in times of crisis, the capitalist system will continue to produce fascist regimes.
Yes.
Elsewhere in the article, he definitely argues that we are not currently in fascism, but that the we are maybe moving towards it.
Yes. Yeah, that I think I read, and if anybody who listens to it knows something different, please update us. But I think, like, on the Deleuze and Guattari anti-Oedipus, if I'm not wrong, they also argument, like, that fascism is something that it's part of the capitalist
cycle.
It's not an accident.
Yes.
It's just part of how it works. I think I should go back and read that now that I know more words.
Right. Well, and we've had the discussion before where when I was learning a lot more about the various dictatorships and military juntas that the U.S. backed in different places throughout the 60s and early 70s, right? And how some of them did not actually have an individual dictator, how they didn't all necessarily need to be overthrown. Some pivoted back to democracy voluntarily.
Yeah, and they were in the name of democracy.
Right, and some of them, depending on which populations you think are people, only killed a couple hundred folks, you know? And then for me, immediately thinking that, reframing then, the COINTELPRO period as, almost a form of, U.S., you could call it a junta or whatever, but a period where the state takes off the gloves in order to discipline labor and other, or in this case, racial classes as well.
Yeah.
And sets aside the usual human rights or laws that govern the society in order to be particularly brutal.
Yeah.
And then returns to the quote-unquote normal period when, that work has been done.
Yeah, I think, going back to this thing of thinking if this is a fascist regime, I mean, all state regimes have something of fascism, or either if it's a will or a direction, it's just, I think, constituent of it. But yeah, as he said, at least for now, if you think of Mussolini's and Hitler's regime, that that might not, like, that it's more an institutionalized form of fascism. And yeah, maybe that wouldn't, we're living weird times, so I don't even know if it's not possible nowadays, because things are just weird. But I think the important part, and I do think he touches a little bit that is that there are the fascist practices that are, they don't necessarily like need the like to exist in a fascism regime, like. And then I do think that it's an important part of understanding, like, what is this fascism thing. I do think it's important to say, like, that it is the will for unity, but not just the will for unity or homogeneity, but it's the will of unity, homogeneity, by eliminating everything that is the other, everything that is different. It can be like cultural different, political different. So is this desire for purity? And I think that's an important thing to be aware, because sometimes like political movements can be also too attached to certain purities. And that, I think, in the end, like, it is, if it's not, like, the expression of fascism, it, at least it's a fascist will, you know?
Yeah.
And I think this is an important thing to think in when we're living in this.
Yeah. I liked, at least, like, not necessarily all the conclusions of the article, but the article as content to chew on. Because it teases that there's like a few things in discussions around fascism in the US and maybe amongst anarchists, and in particular, or rather anarchists with our liberal families and coworkers or whatever, that always kind of like itch for me. One of them is this kind of like recognizing fascism and like lists of attributes. You know, I forget who, some Latin American author, he's very famous, who has, you know, like the list of like 12 or 100 things that you will know fascism by or whatever. Mm. And to me, like having an extremely loose idea of fascism kind of does like a disservice, you know, because like I've watched situations where someone will be describing fascism to another party and, you know, the person arguing that it is not fascism will be like, well, there aren't camps, you know?
Yeah.
And the person arguing for it will be like, well, there don't need to be death camps for it to be fascism, right? And then there don't need to be, you know, the SS Waffen or afraid to be fascism, and it doesn't need this to be fascism, and it doesn't need that to be fascism. And by the time the person's done arguing, like they've made like fascism sound like not that big of a deal. Essentially, you're like, oh well, I mean, if fascism doesn't need to have any of those things, then like yeah. why is it such a dirty word? You know, essentially, you're pointing to these situations where it's gotten to, and so to me, like these, God, it's a little like the way. That like the word, yeah. Anyway, one of the things that I want, that for me is helpful for thinking about fascism is like the political compass, where like you have like authoritarian communism, you know, and like fascism is basically just like authoritarian capitalism, right? And like the mid-century term authoritarianism was like partially created in order to kind of like obfuscate the difference between those two things. But insofar as that it's like authoritarian capitalism, I think one of the ways that I've been thinking about it lately is, you know, people say like, quote, like no true communism has ever been tried or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
Setting aside like disingenuousness or whatever, false advertising, right? You have communist parties though, right? and the communist parties run a country, and while they're running the country, it's a transitional socialist state, or a socialist transitional state, right, where they are working towards communism, essentially, right? But the transitional period is socialism, right? So you have, and I think thinking of fascism in that way, and that's why fascism can look different, and why it's never like, is it fascism yet, would be like constantly being like, yeah, like in a country run by a communist party, and constantly being like, is it like, in a scared way, being like, is it communism yet? And someone being like, well, it's not communism yet, you know, but you have a party, right? And you have a party that is moving, whose project is moving in that direction, right? So like, I think viewing like...
In the direction of communism, you say?
Well, I'm using that as an example. So in this case, in the direction of fascism, right? Where you have essentially a fascist party managing a transitional state, right? So like the way like a communist party manages like a transitional socialist society towards communism, right?
Yeah.
You have...
That's
why I said setting that aside.
Okay.
I literally said that.
Okay.
So
Go on.
And so, yeah, to me, like conceptualizing of it as like a fascist party managing like a transitional state, basically, right? Where like the route to it is going to be different depending on the culture, mm-hmm. right? Depending on even the geography and the resources available. And stuff like that. And then also, right. And so, also like based on history of what has worked and what has failed. Right. So like the Chinese Communist Party is doing really different stuff than the Russian Communist Party.
Yeah.
Because not because the Chinese Communist Party thinks that the Russian Communist Party proved that communism doesn't work, but because the Chinese Communist Party looked at the Russian Communist Party and said, they did this, 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 and this wrong, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And they fucked it up. And I mean, and again, this is setting aside like whether or not.
Yeah.
Right. And so the Chinese Communist Party takes a different route towards what they are claiming or whatever is communism. And so like, I think conceptualizing of like, a fascist, right, and the process for that for them is finding different parts of the economy or different facets of life, right, and figuring out how to manage that in, and again, this is in theory, in a more communistic way, right? So you're
okay,
like,
but
so you're like, can we communize this? Okay, can we communize farms? Can we communize factories? Okay, the way we communized the farm actually created a famine. You cannot communize the farm that way, right? Can we communize healthcare? Right? Okay, when you communize healthcare this way, everyone just winds up with no fucking healthcare or terrible healthcare. Okay,
can we, unless you're getting, but can you go back, because I'm getting lost, like connected to the fashion, where you were going, like to like the regime that is transitioning to
yes.
fascism.
Right. Yes, well, I'm that's why I'm explaining it, relating it, right? So you've got a fascist party that transitions a society towards fascism, right? And it's going to look different each time because, right, they say, okay, can we authoritarianize this part of society, right? And it's like, actually, when we do that, it like triggers this type of blowback, mm-hmm. right? So we can't authoritarianize this
aspect
of society in this particular way, right?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we either need to do another part first, and then we can return to that, or it just needs to be done in a different way, or the authoritarian version of it needs to look different than it looked
yes.
in a different one, right?
Okay.
And so that's why, to me, like, the basically the concept of asking, is it fascism yet, is, like, yeah, the equivalent to, like, looking at various, like, lefty countries and being like, is it communism? And having it be like a binary, right? Where it's like, because not fascism essentially is
Okay, so you're arguing that it doesn't matter that it's not the pure fascism yet. It the important thing is that, yeah, there is a lot of practice and they are going, like, they are intentionally going towards that goal. If they're going to get to that goal or no, we'll see, because there are people fighting against that too. But that's an important thing to realize. We don't need to wait to get to the fascism regime to finally do something about it. Is it
right? Well, and yeah, and the question of even of like whether or not we've arrived and is it fascism is like not an important question even.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, that I agree with you. Yeah. Because and that's why also like I was trying to bring to the things on how fascism and while I read this text and I went back to a very short text that I really like, that it's the introduction of the Anti-Oedipus that was written by Foucault, and it's called Introduction to Non-Fascist Life, because he argues that that's what the Anti-Oedipus is about. And it doesn't matter if it is or not, but he also established like how this small fascism, you know, how it's important for us to fight like this is small fascism that is also part of our own conduct. And I know that you think that it's that would be just too small and too little, just like to pay attention. Oh, my personal thing. And yeah. I don't think
the other
that
volunteer at the bookstore has a personal fascism. Let me trash them in the group chat, basically, right?
Yeah, well, I don't even think that that's what he was talking about. He was talking about looking at yourself and your own conduct. But I don't think he's just talking about like the small, in that limited way. Like, yeah, of course, you have to look towards yourself first, like it's helpful, and you have to keep looking at yourself in a way, like but it's also like I think it's important that thing to realize like how, because things comes from these small, when you let these small acts sprout and take over, and you know, and if you don't do anything about it, I'm confusing here, but I'm agreeing with you that it's important, like, if it is fascism, like, if, in the sense, is this a fascist regime yet, that really is not that important, but, like, looking what is being done and actively fight against it before it, yeah, don't wait for it to become something worse or institutionalized or anything, that's a good point.
And just understanding that, like, there may actually not be any final form of fascism. That even, like, the fascisms that we think about, right, may have, like, are still just, like, transitional societies, right? So, like Nazi Germany could still be viewed as, like, a transitional, right? One could argue that, like, actual German fascism would have been after the exterminations.
No, the goal is purity.
Yes.
And that also will never get there because in this sense, fascism is even like self-destructive in a way because, yeah, first, like, you want to clean all these people that are not, I mean, I don't know, they are not white, to take Trump's example. And then you remove everyone who's not white. And then you go, well, but this person is white, but they have an accent. Let's remove the accents. Well, this person is white. They don't have an accent. But, you know, they have this religion thing that is not... So you keep, like, and it's just like, it's just you at the end. Like, in the end, fascism is you and yourself, and hopefully you will eliminate yourself because you can bury yourself too. I mean, I don't want, I'm not saying that I want all the process for this person to get to this point when they realize they are unbearable.
Yeah.
Please, no. I would rather they realize that much earlier. But I think that's just where, like, fascism is going. And again, and that's why, like, thinking purity, and I think I think this is an important thing for anarchists to think of, because there is also between anarchists a lot of fight between, I'm not calling anarchists fascists, but there is this fight about like who has the pure anarchism sometimes. And that does lead like to disruption of like I don't know if we can call it a movement, but it removed the strength that anarchism or anarchy could have, instead of like trying to deal with the difference, because yeah, there will always be somebody different than you. There's always be some difference, some other way of wanting to do things. And I do think that as long like your difference doesn't mean eliminating the other, you know, but like how you can, yeah, take into account that that's just what life is. Like all this, life is dirty. It's not pure. It is dirty and it's mixed and it is, yeah, and that's just what it is.
Oh. And then there's this weird hang up, I think, that people have with definitional fascism, where some will argue that there needs to be like a cult of personality, right? That like,
maybe for a fascist regime. Well, historically.
Right. Well, no, and that's why I think it's interesting is, like, if fascism is defined by like authoritarianism with a cult of personality, then also, again, I'm like, so why for people at the very top, it seems like that would be a meaningful difference. But for like those of us living under it, understanding why the difference between faceless authoritarianism versus cult of personality authoritarianism should concern me, you know?
No, sorry, which one's the cult of personality and which one is the other one you said?
So just like non-cult of personality authoritarianism, okay. Right? So I mean like the difference between Pinochet, right, whose like name we all know, and something like the military junta that was empowered in Greece or Brazil, right? Or they had a rotating cast of characters.
Yeah.
Right, where it's like, okay, so like one could be viewed as fascism and the other is not. And like, is it for those at the bottom, like why is that a meaningful distinction, essentially? Yeah. You know?
Yes.
Like why would I be worried about whether this is like, yeah, faceless authoritarianism or like cult of personality authoritarianism.
Yeah, well, I also went, I didn't finish reading this one. I had read before, but there is a text that I would suggest to people that it's in the Anarchist Library by Tomás Ibáñez, and it's called Neo-Fascism, Neo-Totalitarianism, and the Illusion of the Ballot Box. And yeah, and he argues, I forgot when he wrote that, but he prefers not to use the word fascism because he used that like to the term like Hitler's and Mussolini's regimes. But he's also arguing this thing of like the right wing movements and how they act and all, and how this is a thing and how it's connected like to the computer technologies, like with the thing of surveillance, and he also brings some things that I think it's important to think about, like that this kind of sentiments towards a more fascist kind of mindset, they also arise in moments like of instability or when you are afraid for some reason, and then you search for, you know, for this kind of things. And it's, I think it, one of the reasons why I think it's important that he brings that, because we do have to think better, like, so how can we promote a way like of people thinking, and I think this is one of the roles of anarchism, and I think in a way it might connect a little with the previous discussion of the week, they were talking about mutual aid, and I mean, it was more like in a critic size, but it's a like to even to rethink what mutual aid is, but how you promote this thing, like in periods of instability and fear, like how instead of refrain for an authoritarian action or like a figure of a protector or whatever, why people don't like instead build this thing like this network, and you know how to promote that. Anyway, I thought that was a it triggered me as something like, yeah, maybe we do should start to think about. I mean, some people never stop thinking about it, but it made me think like I want to think about that again. You know, how you do that, how in fact, like how you produce things, how you bring, right. Yeah.
Well, and to me, like that's almost like the only argument for prefigurative politics is the fact that they're advertisements for the thing that you want to make eventually. And that there's like not actually much value in like sustaining them, but in producing them, at least in like well fleshed out and like understandable models, right? So like something like the really, really free market,
mm-hmm.
right? Where people see every month, assuming you do the monthly, right? This other model,
mm-hmm.
you know, because part of the way that like the like libertarians took over the US or neoliberals or whatever you want to call them, the Milton Friedmans and such, is this idea that in a time of crisis, mm-hmm. like the ideas that are available are the ones that are reached for. Right. And so if people are unfamiliar with mutual aid and stuff like that, like.
And we don't need to call it mutual aid.
Sure. Just, but seriously, like.
I'm just quoting.
Yeah.
But the
question of why do people tend towards authoritarian structures instead of mutual aid in times of crisis is because people don't inherently tend towards anything. And I know like there's not a non-condescending way to like phrase this, but basically like people are not educated, people aren't inherently anything, and if they're not educated, and educated doesn't need to be in a school or whatever, but via some avenue for other models, like they've been very well educated in what an authoritarian top-down structure looks like.
Yeah, that's our whole life. Like, yes. If you have a problem, you should look for authority and should expect, like, some punishment and things like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, I think that, like, yeah, most people left to their own devices, actually, in the time of a crisis, yeah, pivot.
You go to what is familiar
pivot,
to you.
Yeah, to what seems simple. Exactly. So I think that, like, And we've seen a few products of like anarchist on the ground mutual aid work that then produce things other than authoritarianism. I mean, that the Asheville hurricane is definitely stands out, and I think will stand out for a long time as like a really interesting case study. Margaret Killjoy did several different pieces of media on the ground there,
mm-hmm.
that are worth listening to and reading and such. Because you have hurricanes hitting towns all over the country, right?
Yeah.
So we have like what's the word? The group that is not the experiment group. The
I forgot.
But you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then we have the experiment.
The control group.
Yes, yeah. We have hundreds of control groups, right? And then you have something like Asheville, where, at least when I was younger, we used to joke about it being like the place that anarchists go to retire, the place that anarchists go to have kids and start eating meat, the whatever. And so, yeah, so there's been a migration of anarchists there for a long time. And particularly, I think it also attracts anarchists that value skills.
Mm-hmm.
Just because of its, like, slightly more rural, or at least until recently, like, relatively rural nature.
Mm-hmm.
And so you see that event produce, or the people in that event produce fantastic mutual aid networks and projects and hubs, and the fact that they already had, and I guess the argument for, like, I'll contradict myself and say that the argument for sustaining those projects long term is that they acted as the skeleton that some of those things were built out on.
Yeah.
You know, in the time of crisis, right? And so when people had to reach for something, actually the thing that was closest to reach for was these mutual aid concepts. And, you know, interestingly enough, like, as the state provides less and less help to people, in some ways, mutual aid may become closer and closer in reach simply because that the state option becomes farther and farther away.
Yeah.
As far as aid goes. Running into some conflict where I think the police are still showing up relatively quickly. So, I digress. I do think the idea of, like, having ideas around that are ready, like, out the box in a crisis is, like, how you push your ideas into reality.
Teach people or, like, show people that there is other way of thinking, other way of solving problems that is not the authoritarian way and the punitive way. There is other ways of doing things, and that's the part that I think, like, to bring the Foucault text before, like, yeah, this is something you do want to think for yourself, and then you want to show the people around you, and hopefully they will think. It connects. What were we talking? We talking one of the topics of the week. I think how to make people open to other things. Anyway, it's all connected. It's all connected. That's just the mess. One thing unrelated to the topic specifically, but one thing that I like about this post is because it did made me go to other things that I had not read before, and I just wanted to leave it out there. The first one was the Malatesta's text, also in the Anarchist Library, that's called Democracy and Anarchy. The other one is the one I mentioned by Tomás Ibáñez, that's Neo-Fascism, New Totalitarianism, and the Illusion of the Ballot Box. Also, like, just the Wikipedia thing for ethnic cleansing, because I went there and I was like, oh, this is just, like, the world today. Like, it was, like, crazy how, like, all the boxes, like, for not just for the U.S., but, I mean, U.S. very involved in it.
Yes.
But, like, yeah, it sounds a lot like all the things are happening around us. And Foucault's text also, the one that I already, Introduction to a Non-Fascist Life. Very short, almost poetic, so might not be some people's cup of tea, but... but very simple too. So, anyway, I'm there because I do not have much more to add right now. But
my wrap up or whatever. I thought one of the things I disagreed with was when he says that there were groups that thought that fascism was coming in the '60s, and then it didn't. you know, because what it made me think of very much was folks where, like, when, I don't know, the metaverse or AI or, you know, social media or whatever comes out and people compare it to how, like, there's a freak out about every new type of information technology, you know?
Yeah.
People freaked out about TVs, and people freaked out about radios, and people freaked out about books, and, you know, they'll just get used to it. But the thing is that, like, the part that I always disagree with that, and then this is how I feel about, yeah, like, fascism or whatever coming in the 60s, is I do think, maybe other than books, but maybe including books, like, maybe, like, my, like, civ-cucked imagination is so small that I can't imagine why life without books would be better. But yeah, that actually, like, each one of those things does, like, diminish our social lives in a way that makes the next evolution of them seem like a not cataclysmic next step, you know? So, like, yeah, I do think that, you know, people freaked out about TV, and most of the things that they freaked out about were just correct, you know? Like, people are like, oh, and they all bugged out about that, and then we all got used to it. It's like, yeah, the thing we got used to was...
The fact that we got used doesn't mean just, that they were not evil.
Yeah, just senior citizens rotting on their couches alone in their houses with their brains melting without any exercise. Like that, that's what TV had brought us to before even the introduction of social media, right? Kids.
And it's just the process, like how you get people used to, like, yeah, you can't just bring, like, a device that immediately sucks your whole attention. It's a process. First, you need to get used to look at the screen.
And
it's not that it doesn't has its perks too. It all these technologies has its perks and has things that we use and, like, oh, I'm so glad it, you know.
Yeah.
But also the things that were said before that were evil about them still are.
Yeah. Well, and it, like, I saw a thing several years ago at this point, but yeah, about, like, a new type of tourism that you might be able to do soon, where because you essentially have, like, Google Earth, you know, you might be able to just put on a VR headset and walk around any city you want instead of having to fly there, you know? And I'm like, wow, like, you would need to have swapped out, like, actual, like, you would have needed to cheapen the experience of travel to tourism.
Yeah.
Like, right, like a series of things to see. Okay. Basically,
yeah. Now we're just going, like, Black Mirror did all.
But what I'm saying is in order for, like, looking at something to sound like in order for, like, Google Earth to sound like a thing you could trade for travel, right? Because if your version of travel is staying with somebody, or, you know, staying with a couple different people and, like, cooking and eating with them and you know, like.
Yeah.
Riding horses or whatever the fuck.
Smelling, tasting.
Yeah, you know, like, yeah, I don't know, attending protests or bonfires or...
Yeah.
Then the idea of strapping a video to your face doesn't sound anything like that. But if the thing that you think of travel being is like...
limit travel.
A tight schedule full of museums or whatever, then all of a sudden you've got... And anyway, that's also that. Yeah, I think one could view, like, the 60s fascism in the same way, right? Where it's like there were leaps made during that period that I think made, like, the next step seem reasonable, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, the whole Cold War is probably, like, the only thing that would make the War on Terror seem, like, you know?
Yeah.
Even...
There was a lot of the dictatorships, especially, like, in South America, like, there is researchers that showed, like, they actually never ended. What they did, like, okay, so now the population is tamed enough. It's like, educated enough, like, just to, for these things that we do work out fine, and we don't need to keep killing people and torturing them.
Yeah.
Because people are just following the things. So, yeah, the things are there. It's just like people are just going with it.
Yeah, I mean,
without questioning.
Yeah, I mean, Chile is like such a stark example of that, right? Where they come in, they put in a fascist era constitution, right? Like,
yeah,
the immutable rules of your society are put in by a fascist dictator. And then, yeah, 20 years in or whatever, the dictator's like, all right, well, this thing seems to be pretty much running itself at this point.
Yeah.
I can leave.
Yes.
You know, and you still got the same fucking constitution 50 years later.
Yeah. Okay, is it a wrap-up?
Yeah. Yeah,
okay.
We can call it.
Yeah. Well, nice talking again.
Yep. Donnie fucking don't.
And choo-choo.
Out.
Bye.
This week's podcast was sound edited by Rosinante. The What's New was written by Chisel, read by Chisel, and
Bob, we add a baby, it's a boy.
We hope this podcast is useful to you.